This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. 5 years ago, a guy named Cody Wilson fired the world's first fully 3D printed gun at a range in Central Texas. Then he shared the blueprint for printing that gun online. It was downloaded more than 100,000 times in the first few days. The State Department caught on and demanded that Wilson take the blueprints down. That resulted in a multi-year legal battle and a settlement, and now he's back to developing his digital arsenal. This case raises concerns about the technology's capacity for printing guns under the radar, and perhaps outside the law. How does 3D printing work? And if you can print a gun, what else can you make? That's just ahead on 1A. Stay close.
The following message comes from our sponsor, Capital One. The CreditWise app from Capital One recently released three new features, including a social security number tracker, to help users quickly detect fraud for free. Here's head of CreditWise, Joe Whitchurch.
While identity fraud is intimidating and can sound really complex, a little bit of effort can go a long way in helping you understand if you've been a victim of identity fraud.
CreditWise is free for everyone, whether you're a Capital One customer or not. You can find CreditWise in your app or Play Store now.
Did you know you can set your Amazon Echo to give you the news every morning? Just say, enable up first. Then tomorrow, say, what's the news? And start your day with up first.
Joining us to discuss it is Adam Clark Estes, senior editor at the tech website Gizmodo. Adam, welcome to 1A.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And joining us here in studio is Trevor Johnston, an associate political scientist at the RAND Corporation. He's the lead author of RAND's report on 3D printing called Additive Manufacturing in 2040, Powerful Enabler, Disruptive Threat. Trevor, welcome.
Pleasure to be here.
Adam, before we get into this particular case with Cody Wilson, give us the basic layman's explanation of how 3D printing works.
Well, there are a couple of different ways, but additive manufacturing is maybe the most descriptive way for what most people might see out of a cheaper 3D printer. That's when there's a print head that adds a material down and adds it in a different place and keeps going around until a shape is formed. There's another process called laser sintering that is a kind of a big box machine. If you can imagine a giant microwave with material inside and a laser shoots into it and firms up a powder so that it's solid and does so in such a way that it then creates a object.
So we're not talking about, for example, taking a solid block of a material and then carving away at the material until we form what we're after. We're talking about taking minute components of that material, small amounts of it, and placing them and forming it kind of from in an additive way rather than kind of carving away. Is that it?
Exactly. Like the term additive manufacturing implies, you're adding little bits to other little bits until they make up a big bit that looks like what you want it to. And that what you want it to usually comes from a computer-generated file.
Well, let's talk about the big bits that Cody Wilson put together that turned into a firearm that got the attention of the State Department. Give us a sense of what it was exactly that worried the federal government. Was it just this idea of being able to print a gun, or was there more to it than that?
Well, there are a number of things at play. I think that any time the idea of easier access to guns comes up, then it worries the government. Then again, it's not illegal to make your own guns. That's protected by the Second Amendment. And people have been doing it in their garages using old-fashioned techniques that are not that much different than they were in the 18th century. But what's different now is the technology and the ease with which someone might be able to make a gun by downloading a file, plugging it into their 3D printer, clicking print, and then having a gun a few hours later.
Trevor Johnston, talk about the precedent that the administration's settlement with Cody Wilson set. I mean, did the government come to any kinds of conclusions about 3D printing of firearms, or is it still kind of at a legal stalemate?
So I don't know if I would characterize it as a legal stalemate per se, but I think that's exactly right. It's the precedent that I would find most worrisome here in this case, because, I'm not terribly concerned about the near-term implications of this settlement for manufacturing, 3D printing of firearms, small firearms. for various reasons. I think really it's the long-term future implications of this precedent and what it could open up kind of as this technology develops and matures over time.
I wonder maybe also, Trevor, if there are aspects of 3D firearms that still lend themselves to some kind of tracking. Wayne wrote on our Facebook page, this guy's worried about a gun made of plastic being smuggled through metal detectors. He does know that bullets wouldn't be able to get past, right? Not to mention the firing pin or any spring. So Trevor, there are still components of this gun that would have to come from somewhere else. The gunpowder inside the bullet, for example, is not the kind of thing you can 3D print. That's more like a component you would put in a printer. It's that small.
Absolutely. And I would imagine that for security experts in particular, the concern is the next steps in finding some substitutes for requiring an actual metal conventional bullet, 3D printing the bullet itself. The U.S. Army has developed over the last year the first 3D printed grenade launcher, which almost every component of that launcher was printed. Now, that's another level of sophistication requiring industrial grade 3D printing technology and expertise that is obviously far beyond the access or availability of the typical consumer or hobbyist. But
they did it.
They did it. And that's the worrisome part of this, kind of thinking what are the long-term implications. And so much of my work with my colleagues at RAND, Troy Smith and Luke Irwin, has really tried to explore those long-term implications.
I do want to get more into those long-term implications as we continue our conversation with Trevor Johnston of RAND Corporation and Adam Clark Estes of Gizmodo. Some of you are sharing your experiences with 3D printing. David in Tucson tweeted, I've been into 3D printing since 2012. I purchased a PrinterBot Simple Makers Edition and printed parts for other larger printers. I design, print, and build my own 3D extrusion printers from that old bot now, and will be selling some of my art at the local farmers market, on Etsy, and to friends and family. Glad to hear what some of you are doing with 3D printers, firearms or otherwise. Although if you have printed a firearm, we'd be fascinated to know what you printed, how that went, did it fire, and what made you decide to print one. Email us, 1a@wamu.org. Adam, let's talk a little bit about Cody Wilson. He spoke to Slate's podcast called If Then back in March. He talked about his motivations for why he wanted to create this venue for people to print their own 3D firearms. Here's part of what he said.
I believe in it both because I'm like a romantic for the political itself. I believe that anyone should be able to have this type of capacity, like this this customer that got arrested in California. It's very, very powerful, literally powerful, that he was able to create 15 AR-15s for himself, even though he wasn't technically allowed to own one. I know that this creates like a... This is a big problem. And then if the question is, what's the moral good of it? Well, I don't answer it that way. I don't see it as explicitly good or bad from a moral point of view. It's beyond good and evil, surely.
It's Cody Wilson speaking to the Slate podcast, If Then, back in March. Adam, what do we make of Cody and his motivations for creating this digital library of firearms?
It's a good question. And he's a very well-spoken guy and has his pitch very well developed at this point. I have been in touch with Cody since he first came up with a plan for a 3D printed gun before he'd even printed one that fired. And my impression was always that really, maybe despite the First Amendment argument, he likes the idea of getting guns into more people's hands, making it easier for people to get access to guns. I think that he deeply opposes a lot of gun control laws and is sort of this techno-anarchist who thinks that technology can sort of solve the gun debate and he wants to be the one to do it.
Nestor wrote on our Facebook page, individual gun control is over. Technology, not the government, has made this so. 3D printing is going to upend many business sectors, not just the firearms industry. This will be bad news for gun manufacturers, too. When the day comes that you can print off an AR-15, the firearms manufacturers will be faced with declining markets.
Yeah, no, I think one of the key aspects of that listener's comment that I think is especially important there is this idea of disruption. And in our research, we really began by kind of interviewing a whole host of different folks from government, industry, the security sector, trying to get a sense of where is this technology going? What are the long-term security implications? And we actually were surprised to find that there's not a terrible amount of consensus around the potential limits of this technology and its downstream implications for security. And part of this has to do with what are the sectors, what are the industries that are going to be the most disrupted going forward? And, you know, I think weapons proliferation is obviously one of the biggest threat domains that we have a right to think about. And it's certainly the focus of today. But there are other ways that this technology will dramatically change social, political, and economic life.
Is this the kind of thing, Trevor, where if it hadn't been Cody Wilson, and I should be clear, he's not here to speak for himself, so we don't want to, you know, malign his intents too much because he's not here to defend himself. But if not Mr. Wilson, someone would have done this? Was this kind of thing just inevitable?
I would tend to agree with that. And I also think that to some extent, and I don't want to, you know, derail us too much, but there's a question of whether or not this is somewhat of a distraction. So, I mean, we can look at extensive gun control policy studies, and there's huge variation or lack of clear results about the effectiveness of those policies. So I would refer listeners to look more at the RAND Gun Policy in America initiative for some of the rigorous analysis there. But I think at the end of the day, there are real limits to 3D printing of weapons and firearms of all types. And I think it's something worth discussing in depth.
I do want to discuss more the potential for regulating these kind of weapons. In just a moment, we'll hear from a former lawmaker from Capitol Hill who tried to help regulate 3D printed guns. And we'll continue with Trevor Johnston and Adam Clark Estes, and we'll get to more of your questions too. Stay close.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Bloom with three O's. Is your 401k on pace? Go to Bloom401k.com/NPR for a smarter, simpler way to grow your 401k. Bloom does all the work for you so you can relax, then retire. See how your 401k stacks up in minutes. Enter your employer-held 401k login info at Bloom401k.com and get a free analysis. Use code NPR to get 1 month managed free.
What's unique about the human experience, and what do we all have in common? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on TED Radio Hour, we go on a journey through the big ideas, emotions, and discoveries that fill all of us with wonder. Find it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We are discussing 3D printing through the world of printing firearms and much, much more. Rick in Hyattsville, Maryland, not far from here, emailed, "Only in America. It's all about guns. Now you can print out guns? I own a gun, but this is just crazy. We have as much mental illness in America as the rest of the world, but no one has the amount of killing we have because of our access to guns." Adam, I can only imagine that part of the larger dispute, the larger debate around this has to do with this very issue, the debate over guns in America and the potential for there to be who knows how many more when anyone can just print one in a moment of pique.
You could say that, but then again, there's probably nowhere where it's easier to get a gun than it is in the United States. And to get a 3D printer is quite expensive. To get the technical know-how to make a gun that you could fire on a dependable basis, I think that's arguably harder than going to a gun store and buying one. So I'm not sure that the debate we need to be having is over how dangerous 3D printed guns are at the moment. Maybe we should get back to the basic debate over how easy it is to already get a gun in the U.S.
Trevor?
Yeah, like I completely agree with Adam there. I think at the end of the day, while 3D printers have dramatically declined in cost over time and are certainly much more accessible and available than they once were, you know, the more industrial grade printers that would be required to do more sophisticated kind of printing, those remain outside of the hands of most consumers or hobbyists. The technical requirements are certainly non-trivial for producing various things using a 3D printer. And most importantly, as I think Adam was getting at, is that at the end of the day, in the near future, ready access to conventional firearms are certainly going to be the more preferred option. And most people have clear access to that. At these 3D printed weapons are severely diminished in terms of their lethality and their durability. And I think Cody Wilson's work has even shown that, some of his experiments.
Yeah, regarding the difficulty of it, Randy emailed, I feel like 3D printing is still confined to a small amount of users that have an understanding of CAD, computer-assisted design, or coding, or some more advanced technical know-how, until the software makes it more like the replicator from Star Trek, where you can just select a picture of, say, a coffee mug, hit print, and get the finished product, then I don't think it will take on mass use. There's one more voice we want to add to this conversation, but before I bring him in, Adam, can you just talk a little bit about that? I mean, if I did want to 3D print a firearm, what do I actually have to do? Do I just download the design and fill up the printer with whatever material and push go? Or is there more to it than that?
There's a little more to it than that. You have to have access to a 3D printer. And Cody Wilson himself had a lot of trouble getting a 3D printer that was sophisticated enough to print the very basic Liberator gun that he famously shot in Central Texas. And then you have to get access to the right materials. Some of these can be expensive. We're not talking about cheap plastics. You want something that is capable of handling ballistics. Until Cody Wilson relaunches his website and makes the files easy to get, in the past few years, you'd have to probably go on the dark web and find a weird forum where someone had these files available. To make the files yourself is actually very, very difficult. In a recent Wired article, there's a video that shows a multi-million dollar piece of equipment that Defense Distributed is using to create these files, where they're making extremely precise measurements of every single point on a gun part in order to translate that into the digital file. So if you don't have that file, then it's really going to take a lot of technical know-how.
And Defense Distributed is the name of Cody Wilson's company. One more comment from Gene, who wrote on Facebook, when technology becomes a firearm, it needs to be regulated, just as firearms are. Criminals printing up firearms is a very bad scenario, but most likely, they're more likely to buy them on the black market. Let's talk about regulation now with former Congressman Steve Israel. You may remember we spoke to him not too long ago about his novel called Big Guns, a satire about a campaign to require all Americans to own a firearm. Recently, he wrote about 3D printed guns in an op-ed in the New York Times. Steve, welcome back to 1A.
Joshua, thanks for having me on.
What do you make of the case of Cody Wilson?
Well, I think it's a dangerous case that he makes. What troubles me more is that there had been, from 1988 under Ronald Reagan until several weeks ago, broad bipartisan consensus, both in the White House and Congress, that there was a valid public policy in trying to prevent the use of plastic firearms. It's something Ronald Reagan supported when we passed the Undetectable Firearms Act in 1998. It's something that Bill Clinton supported when he renewed it. It's something that George W. Bush supported when he renewed it. It's something that a very conservative Republican named Howard Coble from North Carolina and I agreed to when we renewed it. And the Trump administration, just several weeks ago, agreed to a legal settlement with Mr. Wilson that acknowledges his right, in the words of the settlement, to produce online instruction manuals for a pistol that can be made by anyone with access to a 3D printer. The government not only supported Mr. Wilson's right to provide downloadable files so that people can construct a 3D printed gun, but actually paid close to $40,000 of his legal fees. So more than Mr. Wilson, I'm concerned by this administration's decision to reverse so many years of bipartisan policy on this issue, empower Mr. Wilson, and even pay for his legal fees.
Now, as I understand it, part of Cody Wilson's argument is on First Amendment grounds, this idea that 3D printed instructions for a firearm are information, they should be protected under free expression. It sounds like a version of the argument that the Washington Post and the New York Times made with regards to the Pentagon Papers, where you can't punish those publications before they decide to do something with them. If they're released and then something happens, that could be prosecuted, but otherwise you're exerting what's known as prior restraint, which is a violation of the First Amendment. Do you buy that argument?
Well, Mr. Wilson sued the government after being forced by the State Department to take down online instruction manuals for a pistol that could be made with, as I said, anyone with access to a 3D printer. And his argument was that he had the right under the First Amendment, and I suppose under the Second Amendment as well, to provide these codes, these instruction manuals to people. The Trump administration agreed with him. Look, the Pentagon Papers never threatened anybody in a crowded movie theater where there was a fire. There was no threat by the Pentagon Papers to that, to anybody in a theater. My argument, and the argument of many on both sides of the aisle, is that giving Mr. Cody the right to teach people, tutor people on how to construct a weapon that could slip by a TSA agent at an airport, or can be ultimately manufacture an AR-15 that could be used in a movie theater or in a school, that is the quintessential yelling of fire in a crowded movie theater.
We heard from a number of you about the difficulties of doing this kind of work with a 3D printer. As we said, 3D printers already require a little bit of expertise. At least today they do. Mike tweeted, "As someone who has restored and built various firearms, I doubt a 3D printed firearm would be of much quality. Yes, it may work, but I doubt its accuracy. If you wanted to make a firearm, you are better off using a CNC machine. A CNC machine is a computer numeric control machine. It's that conventional manufacturing machine. If you've ever seen a thing that takes a block of material and goes and carves away into it, that's a CNC machine. It's kind of the carving away version as opposed to the building up from a smaller materials version that we described at the top of the show. Sarah wrote on our Facebook page, "Our group Fab Lab Hub, which is part of the MIT Center for Bits and Atoms, interviewed 200 manufacturers, and the biggest challenge to mainstream adopting 3D printing is finding skilled staff to run the machines. It's not as easy as it looks." Adam, how long do you think it'll be till these challenges are surmounted? Finding the staff, getting the machine to be of a high enough accuracy, a high enough quality. Are we decades away from this, years away from this, months away from this?
Well, I think if you're talking about CNC machines, for instance, we're already there. And Cody Wilson's company, Defense Distributed, will sell you a machine, a CNC machine, that will allow you to produce a ghost gun, a gun that is completely untraceable. Those machines are very expensive, just like the 3D printers needed to 3D print a gun are. But I do think we're years away from the ability to 3D print a gun that's not just made of plastic, that doesn't, which has, of course, all of its own problems, but looks much more like a gun that you might buy in a store. This is just a matter of materials technology getting better and the 3D printing technology getting better, and it is getting better very quickly.
Trevor Johnston, what do you see in terms of the government's ability to regulate 3D printing of firearms and of everything else? We've kind of seen on Capitol Hill with the recent hearings involving, say, Mark Zuckerberg, the co-founder of Facebook, how much of a learning curve there is for some of our lawmakers to just understand social media, let alone 3D printing. How far off is, say, Capitol Hill from wrapping its arms around this?
Well, you know, I think quite a bit away from that. I don't think there's really even a conversation there yet. And in part that there are these technological hurdles and just expertise that's still required to even, to some extent, ask the right kinds of questions. And so just picking up first on Adam's point, I mean, there have been recent trends, advances in additive manufacturing, colloquially known as 3D printing, having to do with printing with multiple materials, which allows for more complex types of goods and objects, self-replication or duplication of material of printers, which will obviously allow for a proliferation of devices as that becomes more of a reality, which certainly limits the government's ability to control access to these devices. And then, efforts to source raw materials in more inhospitable or remote areas. So there's real potential here of trying to find ways to break the constraints of traditional supply chains by being able to really harvest the raw materials wherever you need them, desert sands, maybe even Mars eventually, things like that. And so we're really pushing up to the frontier, and it's not surprising that Congress and policymakers in general isn't really focused on this new emerging future threat.
Steve Israel, what would you say to your colleagues about what they should be doing
with regards to 3D printing?
Well, actually, the conversation has been had ever since 1988, and Republicans and Democrats have tried to effectuate policy that keeps up with rapidly advancing technologies. In 1988, when the Undetectable Firearms Act was passed, the thought of replicating a gun with a 3D printer was, as was said before, a Star Trek episode. When it lapsed in 1998, most members of Congress realized that this technology was around the corner. In 2003, when it was reauthorized, it seemed to be coming quicker. And then in, when it was renewed again, we saw Cody Wilson firing bullets from a 3D gun. So Congress is aware that this technology is out there and a clear and present danger. The problem is this, and this is what I would say to my colleagues. The NRA supports the reauthorization of the Undetectable Firearms Act, but they are trying to put brakes on it. They will not allow it to apply to new and advanced technologies. They will not allow it to be based on a complete ban of any metal in the technology itself, which is what you need to show up on a metal detector. And I'm hoping that more members of Congress, when they see how quickly this technology is advancing, they'll not only renew the Undetectable Firearms Act, but they will include language that takes into consideration the quick advances that are being made and stays ahead of danger instead of having to catch up to it later on.
Ali from Dearborn Heights, Michigan, emailed, "The conversation seems centered around firearms and the harms of 3D printing. This technology opens up the abilities for people to print prosthetics at home at a fraction of the cost of current prosthetics. There's a potential for 3D printing to help revolutionize medicine at home. Even the International Space Station has had to use 3D printing to print a tool instead of having to have it rocketed up to them. Can you talk about the benefits of 3D printing at home or in remote areas?" Ali, I'm glad you brought that up. Adam, I did want to pivot away from this firearms conversation to some of the other things that are happening with 3D printing. We heard from a number of our listeners about how you're using 3D printing. Here is some of what you said.
"Recently, the interior door handle on my father's 2000 Volkswagen Beetle broke. I was able to sketch a new interior door handle and then print it out on my 3D printer.
I have several 3D printers at home to make household goods like small tools, modular storage, custom decorations. But recently I've begun experimenting with photogrammetry to turn statues from the Cleveland Museum of Art into 3D printable models that people with visual impairments can use to explore the art that they otherwise would never get to touch.
Hello, I've worked in the product development field and have utilized 3D printers for about 15 years, and I helped print a prosthetic hand for a five-year-old boy that was born with a deformity utilizing an open source design that was put out by the Enable Project.
So Adam, on one hand, I'm really amazed. On the other hand, I'm hearing this, I'm like, what the hell am I doing with my life? These people are printing prosthetic hands for kids. This is kind of incredible. I know we got to move on shortly, but Adam, what do you think is the biggest impediment that's clearing away for more people to do this kind of 3D printing? Clearly it's getting easier. What's making it easier, briefly?
Well, I think the prosthetic hand is a great example. There was a story a few years ago of a young person, maybe it was even a teenager, who used a 3D printer at his local library that was available to everyone in open source software to 3D print a prosthetic hand for another young boy. I think he was around 5 years old. And this is someone who didn't really have any expertise but had resources at his local library that were available to the public. And I think that just access to the technology is an impediment for these what can be life-changing objects for others that can be printed for free nearby.
Trevor, your thoughts on where this is going briefly before we got to move on?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a great point. And I know the latter half of the hour will address these issues more expansively, but the potential applications and welfare benefits from this innovation are frankly incredible. And part of our concern in our report was, while there are real threats in the long term, we have to be careful about the policy trade-offs and the potential strangling of innovation over time.
Trevor Johnston, an associate political scientist at the RAND Corporation, Adam Clark Estes, senior editor at the tech website Gizmodo, and Steve Israel, author of the novel Big Guns and former congressman for New York's 3rd District. Gentlemen, thanks for talking to us. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on the NPR One app. And hey, if there's an episode you like, please do send it to a friend. It's one of the best ways you can support 1A. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.